I wanted to start this morning with a song that was kind of, I guess, maybe popular when I was a kid. It's not in the hymnal. We're not going to sing. I'm going to read you a song. This is a song by Baz Luhrmann called Everybody's Free. And it's a spoken word song. It takes the form of a commencement address at like a high school or college graduation. And it's, well, you'll get it. He says, "Ladies and gentlemen of the class of 97, wear sunscreen. If I could offer you only one tip for the future, sunscreen would be it. The long-term benefits of sunscreen have been proved by scientists, whereas the rest of my advice has no basis more reliable than my own meandering experience. I will dispense this advice now. Enjoy the power and beauty of your youth." Or never mind. "You will not understand the power and beauty of your youth until they have faded. But trust me, in 20 years you'll look back at photos of yourself and recall in a way you can't grasp now how much possibility lay before you and how fabulous you really looked. You are not as fat as you imagine. Don't worry about the future. Or worry, but know that worrying is as effective as trying to solve an algebra equation by chewing bubblegum. The real troubles in your life are apt to be things that never crossed your worried mind. The kind that blindside you at 4 p.m. on some idle Tuesday. Don't be reckless with other people's hearts. Don't put up with people who are reckless with yours. Floss. Remember the compliments you receive. Forget the insults. Keep your old love letters. Throw away your old bank statements. Get plenty of calcium. Be kind to your knees. You'll miss them when they're gone. Enjoy your body. Use it every way you can. Don't be afraid of it or what other people think of it. It's the greatest instrument you'll ever own. Dance, even if you have nowhere to do it but in your own living room. Read the directions, even if you don't follow them. Do not read beauty magazines. They will only make you feel ugly. Get to know your parents. You never know when they'll be gone for good. Be nice to your siblings. They are your best link to your past and the people most likely to stick with you in the future. Understand that friends come and go, but for the precious few, you should hold on. Work hard to bridge the gaps in geography and lifestyle, because the older you get, the more you need the people who knew you when you were young. Live in New York City once, but leave before it makes you hard. Live in Northern California once, but leave before it makes you soft. Accept certain inalienable truths. Prices will rise. Politicians will philander. You too will get old. And when you do, you'll fantasize that when you were young, prices were reasonable, politicians were noble, and children respected their elders. Respect your elders. Be careful whose advice you buy, but be patient with those who supply it. Advice is a form of nostalgia. Dispensing it is a way of fishing the past from the disposal, wiping it off, painting over the ugly parts, and recycling it for more than it's worth. But trust me on the sunscreen. Some of the advice that he gives in that song is profound. Some of it is pretty simple. Floss, dance, don't read the read the directions. But some of it is really solid. Oh, work with me here. Okay. What advice would you give someone to help them flourish in life?
Be kind.
Be kind.
Be forgiving.
Be forgiving. Y'all keep answering. I'm just going to push the button.
Know God.
Boring. Be kind, be forgiving, know God, listen.
Remember that the church is for the imperfect.
Remember that church is for the imperfect.
Read the book of Proverbs.
Yeah. Solid advice. Nobody wants to say get plenty of calcium. That's a good one.
Along with a whole bunch of other things like that, zinc and magnesium.
A multivitamin. Filled with the Spirit.
Start the day with prayer.
Okay.
My favorite verse, and it's Proverbs 3:5-6. Trust in the Lord with all your heart, lean not on your understanding, in all your ways acknowledge Him, and He will direct your paths.
That's one of Kenzie's current memory verses. So I want to remind you the outline of Proverbs. This should look familiar if you were here, 2 weeks ago? You have the introduction and purpose statement in the first 7 verses. And then you have this block for the first 9 chapters of a set of poems. They're not individual proverbs, they're poems. And then you have, what is that, about 20 chapters of the traditional proverbs that we're familiar with, the little fortune cookie sayings. And then 2 chapters to end it. Today, we are going to be in, you can't even really tell that did anything. We're going to be in that first box, speeches and poems. This is where Steve was last week, and we're going to be here today, and Paul's going to be in it next week. This is a collection of 10 speeches and 4 poems, and I've given you the verses there. I don't expect that. I don't have any of this memorized. I have to look through and kind of find it. But you can tell when you're getting into a new speech from the Father to the Son, because each speech begins the same way. It always begins with, "My Son, listen to me, and take the things I say and bind them around your heart." And when you read all 9 chapters together in succession, it sounds really repetitive. Because it's like every 15 verses you're being told, "Listen, my son, bind my commandments around your heart. Wear them as a garland around your neck." Everything we talk about today is going to be in those 10 speeches on the right. And rather than try to walk through the entirety of all 10, I wanted to spend time on what I think are the 3 biggest themes that come out in those speeches, the 3 biggest pieces of advice that the Father has for His Son. And because it is a dad giving advice, I thought about calling it Dad-vice. And I told Macy, I'm teaching a class this week, and I'm thinking I'm going to call it Dad-vice, but I also might call it How to Ruin Your Life in 3 Easy Steps. And she thought that was a lot more catchy. So that's how we're going to do it. How to Ruin Your Life in 3 Easy Steps. If you were going to warn your own kids or grandkids about things that they might do that would ruin their lives, what would you warn them about?
Shooting from the hip.
Shooting from the hip. Being reactive. That's solid advice.
Gary? I know why it sounds repetitive, because everything we told our daughters, you had to tell them 4 or 5 times because they wasn't going to listen to it that first week.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe the last 20 years.
James tells the grandson to go calm, think 5 seconds ahead. Think 5 seconds ahead. Think about what you're doing before you do.
Yeah. And maybe how this might be received.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If I wanted to ruin my life, what would be like the most efficient ways to do that?
Worrying about
worrying about everything. Yeah?
Be a people pleaser.
Being a people pleaser? Which is connected to the shooting from the hip. Somebody comes up with a complaint and you're like, oh, well, let me just fix everything.
Partnering with the wrong person.
Oh, partnering with the wrong person. Yeah, choosing your friends wisely. I saw a hand over here.
It goes with everything everyone's been saying, but overthinking is another one.
Overthinking. Well, you say that. I feel like overthinking is the opposite of being reactive. It's just thinking too much. Yeah, getting stuck. Yeah.
And also overcommitting.
Overcommitting? All right. Well, we're going to look at the three themes that the Father wants to focus on. And here's the first. If you want to ruin your life, trust yourself. Trust your gut. Don't listen to advice. Don't seek out expert opinions. And where we see this is over and over and over. The Father tells his Son, listen to my commands, heed what I say, memorize my words, remember my words. When you're in the situation, think about what old Pappy used to tell me, and then do it. Obey what I tell you. And trusting yourself can be ignoring what other people have to say. It can also be congratulating yourself on a job well done. I'm responsible for my own success. An inability to show gratitude is evidence that you trust yourself, because I didn't need anybody else. What should we do instead of trusting ourselves?
Trust God?
Same thing? Okay. Proverbs 2. Boy, you can't really tell that that's bold, can you? If you call out for insight and raise your voice for understanding, if you seek it like silver and search for it as for hidden treasures, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. So the Father tells his Son to do two things: to ask for wisdom and to seek wisdom. Instead of putting our trust in ourselves, should we ask God for wisdom and he'll grant it? Or should we be actively involved in seeking it out and trying to discern it? Both. One is really passive. Father, just give me wisdom. Just shower it on me. The other is active. And the Father puts both of them together and says it's both. You need to seek out wisdom. Ask God in prayer. Seek the scriptures. But also, God is not the only one that the Father says to listen to. Who else does the Father say the Son should listen to? The parents. Yeah, the Father. Listen to me. Don't just trust yourself. And when we read the book of Proverbs, remember we talked about this 2 weeks ago, that the book of Proverbs is, it's communal wisdom. This is from the experience of an actual community and how they, the things that they have noticed collectively. When you study Proverbs, you're not only receiving what God wants to say to you, you're also receiving what your ancestors want to say to you. Does that make sense?
That reminds me of James 1:5.
James 1:5?
If any lacks wisdom, let him ask of God.
Yeah, yeah. James is like the Proverbs of the New Testament. It really is. It really is. So Proverbs 3, Jenna brought this one up. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him and he will make straight your paths. Or the way Kinsey memorizes it, and he will make your paths straight. So it feels weird for it to come off my tongue any other way. Be not wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and turn away from evil. Trust is not just something internal, is it? Trust isn't an emotion. How do I know if Fayanne trusts me?
By her actions.
By her actions. Trust is an action, isn't it? If I say, I trust you, but then I don't take your advice, do I really trust you? Or do I trust myself? Yeah, to trust the Lord is to do something despite my own intuition, doing what God says to do rather than trusting in my own judgment. What's going to happen to me if I choose to trust God and listen to others, pay attention to the Father, take advice, all that sort of stuff? What's going to happen in my life? Happiness. Here's what the Father says. Discretion will watch over you. Understanding will guard you, delivering you from the way of evil, from men of perverted speech. Watching, guarding, delivering. The word that I would use is protection. You're going to be protected from things that could go wrong in your life if you only pay attention to yourself and your own reasoning. And then in chapter 3, we had a little bit of a squabble about this passage last week, so I'm not going to belabor this. If you pay attention to my words, my son, it will be healing to your flesh and refreshment to your bones. Honor the Lord with your wealth and with the first fruits of your produce, and then your barns will be filled with plenty and your vats will be bursting with wine. I think we have a picture between these two passages of a flourishing life. Does that mean that nothing bad is ever going to happen and this is a guarantee, take it to the bank? Of course not. But at the same time, I think there is something to be said for the idea that if you trust in the Lord and you seek wisdom and you live by wisdom, that's going to lead you to a certain kind of life. Exceptions duly noted. And prosperity is not an end in itself, but poverty is not a virtue in and of itself either. Satan accuses Job of trying to work the system. Now, the only reason he does what he does is because he's figured out the system and he's doing what he does so that you'll reward him. It doesn't work like that. You can't work the system. But if you trust in yourself and your own understanding, things are not going to go well for you. But if you trust God and seek wisdom from others, things are probably going to work out just a whole lot better for you. Okay, where do you see people being encouraged to trust in themselves? Social media, everything you see on TV, everything you read. Works at the church. Yeah, and then you walk into church and the message of church is, man, you're just not that good of a decision maker. Okay, that's one way to ruin your life. Trust in yourself. Don't pay attention to what anybody else has to say. You do you, boo. Here's a second way to ruin your life. Do wickedness. If you want to ruin your life very quickly, treat people badly. And I say wickedness, I kind of wrestled with, like, is that the best word to describe the particular things the Father talks about in these chapters? I don't know. And it's a pretty churchy word. Wickedness. I mean, you have like the Wicked Witch of the West, but other than that, I can't think of the last time I heard the word wicked outside of church. But the Father targets a few behaviors in particular. So look at chapter 1, verse 10. He says, "My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent." And he actually goes on for the whole speech to talk about getting roped into a gang. And this is the first speech. This is like first thing out of the gate. "Son, here's what I need you to know. There are going to be these guys who are going to come along. They're going to peer pressure you. into joining in with them, and they're going to go and ambush someone and beat them up and take their stuff. Don't do it. If sinners try to entice you, don't consent. One form of wickedness is violence, especially against the innocent, and especially as a result of peer pressure. And then in chapter 3, we get this rapid fire sort of list of things you want to avoid. He says, don't withhold good from those to whom it is due when it's in your power to do it. Do not plan evil against your neighbor. Don't contend with a man for no reason. Don't envy a man of violence, and don't choose any of his ways. How would you summarize those commands? And I already took do wickedness, so you don't get to use that one.
Do not wrong your fellow man.
Don't wrong your fellow man. I like that. I should have used that instead of the wickedness thing. Wickedness is just so big, and this is so specific.
The first one almost is the golden rule.
Hmm. Yeah, the first one, I should have looked into it more, but I was just in a rush. That feels like there's some parallel in the New Testament. Don't withhold good when it's in your power to do it. Or maybe don't. What is it James says in chapter 2 about if you just wish someone well, but you don't actually help them? Be warm and well fed, but you don't do anything for their physical needs.
Or love your neighbor as yourself.
Yeah. So the way we might summarize this, don't wrong your fellow man. I had treat people fairly. What should you do instead of wickedness? What should you do instead of not wronging your fellow man?
Be kind, goodness.
Be kind, goodness. And you could just go down the line, right? Don't withhold good from those to whom it's due. What should you do instead?
Love.
Do good. Share with those who are in need. Don't plan evil against your neighbor. What should you do instead? Love your neighbor. What was it? Help. Wish them well. Don't contend with a man for no reason. Do you know anybody who is just scrappy and they're just, seems like they're always looking for a fight for no real reason? Don't do that. Seek the good of the people who trust you. Leave people alone. If you want to get along in life, just leave people alone. Don't envy a man of violence. Okay, what's going to happen to you if you choose to do those things instead of choosing to do these things? If you take the right path, what's going to happen? If you have a Bible, turn to chapter 3. And look at verse 4. It says, so you will find favor and good success in the sight of God and man. The reason I had you turn there is this is one of those verses that gets translated different ways. So you'll find favor and what? A good name?
High regard.
Good repute. Yeah, I don't know why the ESV decided to use the word success. That makes it sound like your plans are going to go well. But the point of the verse is that people are going to think well of you. It's about your reputation. You'll have a good name, good repute. Good, what was Jenna's? What did you say?
High regard.
High
esteem.
Yeah, so on one hand, we shouldn't care what people think of us. Right? And that's true. At the same time, there's something to be said for being the kind of person who is respected as a person of integrity. for being known as someone who honors your word, that this woman is not going to fight with you for no reason. This woman is not going to take advantage of you. She's not going to plan against you. She's not going to be yammering behind your back.
Don't you think being trusted. The difference between goal and consequence?
You're not. No, I think goal and consequence are the exact same thing.
But I think the goal is that you're doing all this stuff sort of not because doing is right, but doing it so people will like you or whatever. But if you do what's right, the consequence of that is the good reputation, if you will.
Yeah. If you live in this way and do these right things, a consequence is people are going to think well of you. You'll find favor and you'll find a good name, good reputation. But if you try to do the right thing so that people will respect you, what do we call that? The word for that is manipulation. Do unto others so that they will do unto you. That's not what Jesus teaches. And then down in verse 24, if you lie down, you will not be afraid. When you lie down, your sleep will be sweet. Here's one benefit to doing the right thing. You'll be able to sleep at night. And of course, there are things like insomnia and sleep apnea and things that interfere with sleep. I get that. But there's something to be said for this. Being able to lay your head on the pillow at night with a clean conscience. What similarities do you see between trusting in yourself and doing wickedness? Yeah, so both of them have to do with looking out for number one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's no moral standard there.
Yeah, the moral standard is like
what I want.
What I want goes. Any other similarities that you notice between trusting in yourself and doing wickedness? Made me think of something, and then I lost it.
When you trust in yourself, you tend to want to rationalize things that you know are probably not right in your heart.
Yeah.
Make them right in your heart.
Yeah. Things like money and power have a way of whitewashing our conscience. We can rationalize with the best of them. All right. So if you want to ruin your life, one easy way to do it, trust yourself. Don't listen to other people. Certainly don't listen to God. Another really efficient way to do this, do wickedness, wrong your fellow man, treat people badly. Here's the third piece of advice. Or third way to ruin your life. That is, sleep around. Of the 10 speeches from the Father to the Son, the last three of them are 100% about adultery. That it's far and away the biggest theme that the Father talks about. And in the first two ways to ruin your life, he gives relatively little warning about here's what will happen if you do wickedness. It's just a lot of here's what you ought to do instead. Very, very little warning, lots of advice. But in the last three speeches, it's a lot of warning and very little advice, because the advice is basically just don't do it. These three speeches, one thing I think we need to recognize, these are speeches from a father to a son, not a father to a daughter. And I don't know what it is like to read these texts as a woman. Because in these three speeches, the woman is portrayed as dangerous. Not all women, but the women in these poems are dangerous to his life. And I don't know what it's like to read this as a woman. But I do want to make two comments up front. One is that I do think that sexual sin is more of a temptation for men than it is for women, as a general rule. Now, Katie and I know a woman who, her life was upended because of sexual sin, because she made choices that actually got her in prison and then got her in counseling, and she's actually doing much better now. But this can happen to women, but I think it is far more common for men. And then also, the father is not warning the son about sexuality in general, or even like premarital sex, or even all extramarital sex. He's warning the son about, in our language, the word adultery refers to you are married and you sleep with somebody else. In the Israelite world, adultery is you sleep with a woman who is married, whether you are single or not. It's just what the word refers to. Well, it's certainly about like inheritance. If your union produces a child, then it's your son, but it messes with like family ties and all of that. So this is about, these speeches are warnings about sleeping with married women in particular. And in the biblical world, it is far more dangerous for a man, whether he is married or single, to sleep with a married woman than it is for a single woman to sleep with another man. It is far more dangerous for the man. But whether you are a man or a woman, one of the fastest ways that you can destroy your life is to go into somebody else's marriage and take your pants off. One of the fastest ways to ruin your life. The focus in these speeches is not on sexual activity itself. The focus is on the intrusion into somebody else's marriage and the destruction of somebody else's marriage. That will kill you. Why would a young man, and let's just imagine, I think we're in the right ballpark. Let's just imagine that the son that's being addressed here is like 14, 15, 16 years old. Why would this young man be tempted to do this in the first place? I'll give you a hint. It's not like a big secret. It's not a big mystery. Have you all ever met a teenage boy? Yeah.
I was going to say it's human nature to want what you can't have.
Oh, human nature to want what you can't have. Hormones?
Why does that a boy want to be with anyone?
Yeah. I have in my notes just good old-fashioned lust. Just a carnal desire. Sorry?
And they're bulletproof.
Yeah. No, nothing is going to happen to me. And the father has to say, Oh, but it will. The father is also really concerned about not just all married women, but about women in particular who are going to come to his son and are going to try and trap him. They're going to lure him in. I forget what verse it is, one of these verses, maybe in chapter 6 or so. Don't be captivated by her eyes. The word is like captured. Don't be taken in by her eyelashes. And I think it's a wonderful, just a wonderful image. Or in chapter 7. Chapter 7 is the father saying, you know, I was looking out my window once and I saw this young man walking down the street. And this woman came up and talked to him. And here's what she said. Chapter 7, verse 20, or no, verse 16. That's chapter 6. These pages are so thin. Here's what she said. I have spread my couch with coverings, colored linens from Egyptian linen. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh and aloes and cinnamon. Come, let's take our fill of love till morning. Let's delight ourselves with love. For my husband is not at home. He has gone on a long journey. He took a bag of money with him, and at full moon he will come home. And with much seductive speech, she persuades him, and with her smooth talk, she compels him. I just imagine that he's wearing a tie, and she comes out and is like playing with his tie, right? And then is kind of leading him up the side. You know, can you picture the scene? Okay? All at once, he follows her as an ox to the slaughter. So, whoa. I love that. It gives me chills. The message is don't wear a tie. Okay. Warnings. He who commits adultery lacks sense. He who does it destroys himself. He'll get wounds and dishonor. How is he going to get wounds?
First thing I think of is husband.
Exactly. Yeah. Because the very next verse, for jealousy makes a man furious. The idea is her husband is going to find out. And he's going to come and beat you to death. He will not accept compensation. He will refuse though you multiply gifts. Money cannot buy a husband's jealous eye. Derek Webb.
Everybody's going to be on his side.
Yes, and the law is on his side. Now, he's not allowed to, just in a fit of rage, beat you to death. But he does have the legal right to take you to the elders, and then the town will stone you and her to death. Okay, what should you do instead? This one, two pieces of advice. First one's easy. Just don't go near her. Keep away from her door. Don't let your heart turn aside to her ways. Don't stray into her paths. For many a victim, she is laid low. You know, her house is filled with the bodies of the men that she has destroyed. It's not that all women are dangerous. It's that, son, there are some women who are going to be particularly tempting, and the appropriate thing to do is to have strong boundaries. And then the other is, drink water from your own cistern. That's a metaphor, people. Flowing water from your own well. Should your springs be scattered abroad, streams of water in the streets, let them be for yourself alone and not for strangers with you. Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice in the wife of your youth, a lovely, dear, graceful doe. Let her breasts fill you at all times with delight. And I love this. Be intoxicated always in her love. It's like she is water. The dangerous woman is fire. And if you bring her too close, you will get burned. He actually uses that analogy in chapter 6. But your wife is like water. Let your fountain be blessed and be slaked, be intoxicated, be satisfied in her love. If you want to avoid ruining your life and you're a man, here's what you should do. Enjoy your wife. So, some homework. Previously, I gave a few ideas, and if you picked one of these, you may want to continue on with it. Keep reading a chapter a day. I said if we do a chapter a day from when we started until when we end, that's three whole readings of the book of Proverbs. Next week, Paul is going to teach on chapter 9. So if you're not doing a chapter a day, you may want to read just chapter 9 for next week. And then maybe you have identified an area of your life where you want to grow in wisdom. And you're like, I'm not here for the whole book of Proverbs. That's way too much material. But I do want to find what I can about self-control. Or I do want to learn what I can about humility. Or about, you pick a topic and find some verses. Two other pieces of advice, two pieces of homework that you could do any of these. Seek trusted counsel on a decision. If you got something that's weighing on you, talk to a friend about it. And then if you're married, this week, connect with your spouse. Go on a date. Do something romantic. Maybe even drink from the cistern. There you go. That's the homework. All right. That was the bell. If you guys have thoughts or questions, I'm here all day. But I'm not going to keep everybody. So thank you all for a good class.